muted.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first quarter 2017 conference call. Today, I am pleased to present Øystein Soug, CEO, and Erik Wiklund, CFO. For the first part of this call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question-and-answer session. Speakers, please begin.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first quarter presentation of Targovax. My name is Øystein Soug. I am the CEO, and together with me today, I have Erik Wiklund, who is going to present part of the presentation later. So Erik Wiklund is our new CFO. He just joined us and started working in Targovax on the 1st of April, coming from Aker BioMarine. And he has also worked previously at Algeta, a Norwegian biotech company, and McKinsey & Company. I hope you all have the presentation in front of you. It was sent out in a press release this morning. It's also to be found on our website. Turning to page 3, we take a look at the first quarter highlights. And not every quarter biotech companies have anything interesting to report. And this quarter we actually do. We have presented data from our TG01 study, where we had encouraging top-line two-year survival data showing that 68% of the patients were still alive after 2 years. And we'll talk some more on that later. Also in the quarter, we upgraded our listing from Oslo Access to the Oslo Stock Exchange. And in parallel with that, we have seen liquidity increase from 9 million kroner per day to approximately 13 million kroner per day. And the main reason for doing this upgrade to the main board is that we will be eligible for inclusion into the main indices in Oslo. So that's something we are looking forward to in time. On the finance side, we had 147 million kroner in cash, and we had a net cash flow of 24 million kroner in the quarter and operating expenses of 27 million kroner. As I mentioned, Erik started for us as a CFO on the 1st of April, and during April, we also had some more news about or from the TG platform. One is that the data of TG01 has been accepted as a poster presentation at ASCO, and also we have recruited our first patient into the TG02 study in colorectal cancer, which we are conducting in Australia and New Zealand. Now, turning to page 5, before we actually discuss the data of TG01, I just want to give you a background for the reasons to believe in this platform and the reason why we believe in this platform even before we had data. And that harks back to before Targovax was founded, when this technology was owned by Norsk Hydro, which back then had a hydro pharma division, where 120 patients were treated with TG peptides, and we saw encouraging 10-year survival for patients that were treated with TG01 or TG01 peptides, or individual peptides, in resected pancreatic cancer. So quite similar to the study that we are conducting now. In that study, we saw that 4 out of 20 patients were alive after 10 years, and that's quite spectacular, given that this is pancreatic cancer. And based on that, the company was founded, or at least the Norwegian part of the company was founded back in 2010, with the aim of replicating that data in combination with chemotherapy. So the data which read out in February is essentially the data from the trial that this whole company was founded on. Because they were simply so good, they couldn't ignore them and needed to do a study to replicate, as I said. And I think many people have tried to do cancer vaccines. I think one of the reasons why people have not succeeded with cancer vaccines or peptide vaccines is that the target hasn't been well enough known. One hasn't been really sure about the target one has been attacking. Now, we are attacking RAS mutations, and as opposed to many other approaches, the RAS mutation is very well known and very well characterized. It's one of the first neoantigens that were discovered, and we know a lot about it. RAS is a gene, and the mutation of that gene causes abnormal cell growth, sort of uncontrolled cell growth, which is the definition of cancer itself, and it's only found in cancer cells, so it is also very very targeted. What we do with our technology is that we train the immune system to target the RAS mutation, so the cells that have a RAS mutation, and in that way we are able to kill the cancer cells through the immune system. Another reason why we are seeing results where others have not is that we are using longer peptides. So instead of using 9 amino acid peptides, we're using 7 amino acid chain length peptides, which enables us to attack or to activate not only the CD8 killer cells, but also the CD4 helper cells, which we have always thought have been quite important to get a result, and I think now is also being supported by the data. Turning to page 6, just a small reminder of the study, the TG01 study. It has two cohorts, one cohort with 19 patients and 26 vaccinations, and a modified cohort or a lower dose cohort, if you like, in 13 patients with 15 vaccinations. And what we've seen in these two cohorts is that the immune activation is fairly in line with each other. And what is new now is in the first cohort, we've been able to get the two-year survival data, and that data is coming on the first half of 18 for the second cohort. So we're still waiting for that. But the two-year survival data for the first cohort was released in the beginning of February on page 7. And the reason why we cannot say too much about this already is that this is being held for a poster at ASCO. So median survival and immune activation is going to be presented at ASCO in June. What we can say today is that 68% of the patients, or 13 out of 19 patients, were alive after 2 years. And that, of course, only makes sense if you compare it to something. And this study doesn't have a comparator arm, but historical data suggest a 30 to 53% survival after 2 years. And we think this is a good signal of efficacy, and so do the KOLs that we've talked to so far, and they are supporting us to take the next step, and we have therefore started planning a larger randomized controlled phase 2 trial in the same patient population. Well, the planning on that trial is still in its infancy, so we're not able to say too much about it, but at least we are taking the first step, and we hope to be able to start a phase two study in the midterm future. So that's TG. Turning on to page 9, we would want to discuss the most important ONCOS-102, or the virus trial that we're doing at the moment, which is in checkpoint inhibitor refractory melanoma. And what you see on page 9 is the effect of treatment with the Yervoy. And it's very hard to talk about this revolution in cancer therapy without talking about checkpoint inhibitors. And Yervoy, as most of you will know, was the first checkpoint inhibitor on the market, approved then as a first indication in malignant melanoma. And what you see here is a patient which normally would have been dead after just a few months being treated with Yervoy. And you can see already after 20 weeks, it's a significant improvement. After 8 months, is essentially gone. And this patient also had a liver metastasis, which disappeared. So this is what the fuss is all about. The checkpoint inhibitors pretty much cure cancers in some patients. The problem is that although the effect is very good in some patients, it does not work in other patients. And as you can see on page 10, you will see the rate of responders in various indications. Melanoma here is the best with 60% response rate. And that response rate is a combination of several checkpoint inhibitors. That's a combination of PD-1 and CTLA-4 checkpoint inhibitors used. But still, 40%, they do not have a response. And what happens to the patients that stop responding to checkpoint inhibitors and never respond to checkpoint inhibitors is, in melanoma at least, that you have the possibility to go on a chemotherapy that may have a 15% response rate, but normally all the side effects, which is not very very attractive, or palliative care. In other indications, as you can see, it's even worse, and only 20 to 30% do respond to a checkpoint inhibitor. So both in academia and in the industry, there's a large effort to try to find a solution for these patients so we can provide them with a sensible treatment. And the thinking at the moment revolves around combination therapies involving checkpoint inhibitors. And that's where we think we can play a role, and we think that the ONCOS-102 can actually activate non-responders so that the patients become susceptible to checkpoint inhibitors again, so we can make checkpoint inhibitors effective, not more effective, but effective in more patients. And the reason why we believe that is that we know some facts about these patients. The green patients here, the ones that do respond, they have a tumor microenvironment where the right T cells are present in the tumor. And the red ones, the non-responders, they lack T cells in their tumors. And we call those tumors cold, and the tumors with T cells, we call them hot. And only patients with hot tumors will respond to checkpoint inhibitors. And we don't know that ONCOS-102 can actually turn cold tumors into hot tumors. But looking at page 11, you will see the results of the first phase 1 ONCOS-102 trial, where at least we were able to show that 11 out of 12 patients had an increase in CD8-positive T cells. So I think this is a pretty good indication that if we give this to patients with cold tumors, we will see a sufficient effect in order to checkpoint inhibitors to have an effect on a clinical effect, I should say, rather. So the consequence of that is that we are starting a trial at Sloan Kettering in New York where we look at these patients, the malignant melanoma patients that have stopped responding to checkpoint inhibitors or have never responded to checkpoint inhibitors, and we give them a priming round of ONCOS-102 before we put them back on checkpoint inhibitors. And these patients being checkpoint inhibitor refractory, you would not expect to see a reaction when you give them a checkpoint inhibitor again. So if we have a few patients that actually then respond again to a checkpoint inhibitor after we've given them the virus, it will be a pretty good proof of concept that that the viruses can make the checkpoint inhibitors effective in more patients. It's a very clean trial. It's a fairly small trial. It's only 12 patients, 6 patients with PD-1 monotherapy and 6 patients with PD-1 plus Yervoy in combination. This being a phase 1, we're looking at safety, but also to looking at immune activations and clinical response rate and also critically the correlation between immune activation and the clinical data. We will start giving these patients 3 weeks of ONCOS-102 and then put them on 5 months of Keytruda and see if something happens. Very excited about this trial. We think this is the most exciting trial we are running at the moment. Page 13 and 14 is a bit of a repetition about how the drug works and the data that we've seen. ONCOS-102, that is, the virus. And just very quickly, ONCOS-102 works in a way that we inject the virus directly into the tumor. It there replicate and lyse the cells and release antigens and danger signals. And then the immune system picks up these antigens, or as we sometimes call it, the barcode or the cancer. And based on this barcode, based on the antigens, the immune system starts production of tumor-specific T cells that will kill that specific cancer that has been lysed. And these T cells, they start circulating, looking up the cancer cells, and kill them. The data, which I referred to already from the first ONCOS-102 phase 1 trial, you can see on page 14. I've divided the data into 3 sections. The section to the left is about the innate immune system or the recognition of a tumor threat. And what we saw here is that 11 out of 12 patients had this initial reaction and that all patients also had a fever, which we would like to see. But more importantly are the 11 out of 12 patients that I've already referred to where we saw T cell infiltration into the tumor. That's really what it's all about, is to get the T cells into the tumor. But seeing T cells in the tumor isn't really enough because we don't really know whether all of those T cells are there to kill the cancer or an effect of the vaccination or whether they're there to attack the virus itself. So the reason why we believe or we're actually convinced that this is an anti-cancer effect and not only an anti-virus effect is threefold. One has to do with the correlation, as you can see in the blue boxes on the bottom here, that both in the case of the innate immune system and the adaptive immune system, we saw a strong correlation between the T cells and the survival of the patient. So the stronger the reaction of the treatment, the innate immune system reaction or the increase in T cells, the longer the patient lived. So there's clearly something going on here. A second point was also that we observed a reaction in a non-injected distant metastasis. So one tumor that we did not treat also had an effect, and that is also symbol of a systemic effect. But last but not least, in two patients we were able to draw blood. This was not in the protocol, but we did it afterwards. And we could see specifically that we had produced cancer-specific new T cells that were specific to the tumors of that patient. So based on this data, we embarked on a clinical trial program, which you can see on page 15, where the four first trials, the four first trials are in ONCOS-102, and the two on the bottom are on the TG platform. As I mentioned, the trial on the top here, the melanoma in combination with checkpoint inhibitor, is perhaps our most important trial at the moment. It has yet to start, but we expect the first patient to be included any day now at Sloan Kettering in New York, as I mentioned. And that trial is really a proof of concept. It really is to prove a case that we think should work. The second trial is in mesothelioma, or the lining of the lung. The logic of that trial is quite different. Mesothelioma is a very small indication. It's an ultra-orphan, if you like. And there are no good treatment options for these patients, which means that we are able to treat first-line patients here. And the trial here is controlled, 30 patients, and it's a classical first step on a registration program in mesothelioma. And we expect that if we have good data in mesothelioma, we will go to the regulators and we will find a short path to the market in mesothelioma. At least that is our hope. The two next trials are partnered. The ovarian and colorectal trial are partnered with Ludwig. Of course, the Ludwig is the sponsor, and the CRI is paying for it. We're doing that in combination with durvalumab, which is MedImmune / AstraZeneca's checkpoint inhibitor, and we wrote the protocol together with MedImmune on this one. And CRI is paying for most of the trial, and as it says here, Ludwig is the sponsor. And this is an intraperitoneal trial, so as opposed to the other virus trials where we inject the virus into the tumor, there's a more direct administration, if you like, into the cavity, the abdominal cavity of the patient. That trial hasn't started yet, and the same is the case with the prostate trial with our sponsor Sotio. We have a DC therapy in phase 3. And in both the case of the Ludwig trial and the Sotio trial, they came to us and wanted to do a combination with a virus. They'd done their due diligence in the market and decided that they wanted to use our virus, which we are very happy to provide them with. On the bottom, we have the TG platform, resected pancreatic cancer we have talked about already. We had 2-year survival data in one cohort now, and we have 2-year survival data in the second cohort 1 year from now, or in the first half of 18. And in the colorectal cancer, as I mentioned in the beginning, we have treated the first patient in Australia not many days ago. Page 16 gives you an overview of how we are progressing in a more graphic way. You will see here that we already have the first patient in colorectal and mesothelioma, and could get the first one in the melanoma any day now. When it comes to the sponsor or the partner trial, prostate and ovarian, we are a little bit further behind, but also there, as soon as we get external approval, site readiness and first patient should not be too far away. And now we turn to page 17 and the finances, and I give the word to Eric.
Thank you, Øystein. First of all, I'd like to say I'm very glad to join the Targovax team, and it's great to be part of this journey to develop some new exciting next-generation immunotherapy oncology drugs. On page 17, we have a simple overview of the financial status of the company. At the end of Q1, cash is standing at NOK 147 million, and the net cash flow in Q1 was negative 24 million. Annual run rate is just above 100 million NOK for the last four quarters, with annual operating expenses at 116 million NOK. And of course, at this stage of a biotech company, we mostly have costs relating to clinical trials and CMC process development to manufacture drug for running those trials. During the period, we also listed, as Øystein mentioned, the Targovax shares on the main Oslo Stock Exchange list. Current market cap is roughly 900 million NOK. with a daily turnover of about 14 million, which we're very pleased to see. It's the average over the past 3 months. Also, we're gaining increased attention from analysts, with five major institutions now following and reporting on the share. Moving to page 18, the graph shows the development in the daily average turnover of the Targovax share since the IPO in July 16. And you can see a very nice growth in the trading volume, which currently stands at 14 million for as an average for the past 3 months, and total turnover of about 850 million NOK in Q1. By comparison, this number was about 2 million NOK for the first quarter of 2016, so we've seen a dramatic increase in the interest and trade in the Targovax share. Currently, there are about 3,500 independent owners and about 42 million shares. Moving to page 19, we have an overview of the major milestones of the company, guiding by half years. Green ones are indicated that milestones that have been met. In addition to the listing on the main OSE list, as mentioned, also got very nice and encouraging data in the TG01 trial, as presented by Øystein. And we have now initiated with first patient in to our colorectal clinical trial with TG02. Over the next period, we expect to initiate and get the first patient enrolled in three more ONCOS-102 studies, the melanoma, the prostate, and the ovarian colorectal studies. And later in the year, we're expecting three data readouts from interim data points, two in ONCOS-102 and one in TG02. So there are several very interesting value inflection points in the near to mid-term future of the company. So to summarize, on page 20, Targovax is a company with core focus on immuno-oncology, and quite uniquely for a company at this stage, we have two differentiated product platforms, one of the oncolytic adenovirus ONCOS-102, and the second is the RAS peptide, both aimed at targeting refractory solid tumors with combination trials. We have promising data in phase 1 and phase 2 trials for both of these platforms, clinically demonstrated immune activation as well as signal of efficacy. With this setup, with two platforms and six combination trials, we expect a lot of activity going forward and several value inflection points, and all our six trials are expected to read out in the remainder of 2017 and 18. Corporate-wise, we transferred to the main list, see a nice increase in share turnover and interest in the share and the company in general, and currently cash standing at 147 million NOK. So with that, I think we conclude the presentation from our side, and we are happy to take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question for the speakers, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. Please hold until we have the first question. And our first question comes from Andrew Carlson from ABG. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hello, this is Andrew from ABG. First of all, Øystein, could you talk about, say, the cash burn, the run rate that you show currently? Is this something that we can extrapolate forward, or should we assume that initiating the trials in ONCOS-102 and TG02 should, say, cause a ramp up in cash or operating expenses? And then second of all, say, this value inflection point in ONCOS-102 in melanoma that we are looking forward to the data, could you please say reiterate remind us what is we should expect, say, the level and magnitude, and whether it will be make or break, or we will have to wait for, say, the full proof of concept in 2018. Thank you.
Yes, the first question was about the cash burn, whether it can be extrapolated into the future, and that I will have to say that we expect the cash burn to be higher as soon as we start recruiting more patients, but not significantly. So there's going to be a smaller ramp up. We're not guiding with numbers on the future cash burn, but yes, it's going to be a little bit higher. Okay. When it comes to the data, or the nature of the melanoma data, we have an interim diamond, as we call it, or a data readout point in the second half of 17. But as you noticed, we haven't recruited the first patient yet, so it will actually depend on how quickly we're able to recruit patients into that study, on how many patients we were able to produce a readout during 2017. But what we currently believe is that we will be able to, in a subset of the 12 patients, to say something about the immune activation of those patients. I.e., it's too early to say anything about the clinical data, to see a clinical response, but at least in some of these patients, we will be able to see whether we have been able to immune activate or make cold tumors hot, if you like. So that's the expectation you should have for the 2017 data, and for more clinical data, that will come in 2018.
Okay, clear enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Klas Palin from Redeye. Please go ahead. Your line is now open. Hello, Klas. Your line is now open.
Yes, hello, and thanks for taking my questions. And I would like to start to question about your clinical trials, and especially the mesothelioma trial. If you just could confirm that you have restarted enrollment and treatment of patients in the trial again, and maybe if you can say something, what needs to be done to be able to start enrollment in the ovarian cancer trial?
Okay. When it comes to the mesothelioma trial, the answer to your question is yes. We have restarted treatment and recruitment of patients in addition to the press release that we sent in 2017 that we've started. So yes, we have recruited patients in 2017 as well. When it comes to the ovarian trial, Ludwig is the sponsor. We are at arm's length from what actually happens there, so it's really hard for me to give you any clear guidance on what is needed. But we're still lacking some regulatory ethics committee approval to get started. But as I said, I'm really not sitting on the details, since we're not a sponsor of that trial. What I can tell you is that the trial is taking place in the U.S. It's also taking place at Sloan Kettering. And in addition to Sloan Kettering, there's going to be a few other hospitals in the U.S.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And as another reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. And our next question comes from Yuli Katner from Pareto Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question, and good day, Øystein. Could you just clarify, you told us here that you're going for a short path for mesothelioma in the event of a successful trial. Can you just elaborate a little bit about that? And secondly, on the ovarian trial, could you just clarify how the allocation between colorectal cancer patients and ovarian cancer patients will be divided by the two, if you can? Thank you.
So when it comes to the short path mentioning on the mesothelioma study, that is of course merely a hope. But I think what you see now in cancer treatment in general and in immuno-oncology in particular is that there's a blurring of the phases. So you don't really necessarily need to go through the standard route of phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 as before. If you have good data and you have a sufficiently large safety database, you can get a registration. So I think when we get to that point, that we have the second data readout in the mesothelioma trial, the question will be how good is the data and how many patients do we have in total on the virus in the safety database? And that will determine, the size of the next trial we do in that indication. But that is clearly something that we need to discuss with the regulators when we get to that point. But we do have a hope that since there is a great clinical need and this is a very small indication, that it should be able to get to market rather quickly.
So just to clarify, essentially you're going for a pivot. You're expecting to go pivotal post a successful trial outcome, depending on, of course, the result.
Yeah, I think if we are successful in the current mesothelioma trial, the next trial will be a pivotal trial.
Okay, thank you. And then just secondly, on the ovarian trial in the U.S., or the ovarian colorectal trial, just if you have any clarification on how many patients are included from ovarian and how many patients are supposed to be included from colorectal cancer. Thank you.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and as there appear to be no further questions, I return the conference to you.
Well, thank you very much. And we wish you a continued good week here from Oslo. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.